Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This could be our, like, most exciting moment of After Checkered Flag yet.
I think. Really?
Well, that's an overstatement. But essentially, we are recording an episode the week of the Monaco Grand Prix, the crown jewel in F1's calendar. I don't think you can still say that, by the way, because of Vegas. But anyway, we'll come back to that in a second. But what was the crown jewel? And we are... What do you think we are? 5 kilometers away?
If we really
angle our necks, we can see Monaco out of the window of your hotel room.
And the sun is shining. Doesn't get much better than that.
So yes, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a special episode of After Checkered Flag, where Paul and I are here in Monaco the week of the Grand Prix. Now, we're actually here for some separate reasons. You'll probably find out more in the main Behind the Glass episode, which would have gone live a few days ago. If you're listening to this, if you're on Recast, well, you're legends, because you're getting early access, you're getting the inside scoop that, yeah, Paul and I are here as separate reasons, but we are here, as I say, at the week of the Grand Prix. And well, stuff has been happening. Firstly,
it's been kicking off.
The circuit has been put together. If you drive around Monaco at the moment, well,
feel like a Formula One driver.
Oh my god, I was on the start finish straight yesterday, Sunday afternoon.
Yeah,
it was quiet. I had the whole thing to myself, and I was like, I'm gonna line up,
and launch it. Yeah, I'm gonna do a launch control from P1.
I remembered I had a 5-month-old baby at the back, and I just very slowly pulled away.
I'm sure she would have loved it.
She would have loved it, actually. She's been well into the cars.
We've been sitting at some cafes, and you just hear like A45s and RSTs, and she's like, like looking around very inquisitively.
But yeah, so beyond that, we've seen various team trucks arriving from Imola, awkward. Let's come back to that, I guess. Lots of things we're going to be coming back to in this episode. And we've seen drivers and team personnel around and about town, because as I guess most of us know, so many drivers live here in Monaco, past and present, as do team principals, mainly Toto Wolff. And because there was no Imola Grand Prix, well, they were just hanging around and chilling.
I'm not sure they had that much to do.
Apparently not.
And Imola wasn't that far away. I can imagine, actually, a lot of the drivers and personnel that live down here hadn't even travelled to Imola yet. So they probably just stayed in and around the area, not knowing whether they were going to be racing or not. And then as soon as the F1 sort of made the decision, this isn't going to happen, they were like, cool, I kind of just carry on playing FIFA.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what they all do.
Or walking on the broadwalk, as I've seen Toto Wolff doing about 5 times. I think he's very bored. I get the feeling he struggles to sit around and not do very much, because he's been on a lot of walks with Susie Wolff. Like, we've both seen him.
I know.
5 or 6 times. It's like, and yesterday I saw him and he just went into the shop underneath his apartment block, because Monaco's a very small place.
Yeah.
And everyone kind of knows where some of these more recognisable people live, and it's well discussed, and also because you see them come out and get to come. Anyway, so right under his block is this very nice beach promenade that they did up a few years ago, and there's various restaurants and like two shops. I would assume he's been in those shops quite a few times, but he genuinely yesterday looked like a tourist.
Went into for a browse. Yes,
they were strolling along. Not Lawrence strolling along, but they were, that's my first awful F1 pun of the day. And yeah, just like oh, let's go in the shop and see if they've got anything new this week.
That is like, quite a strange activity to do, isn't it?
Super last thing I expected from him. But I get the feeling he was like, I don't know what to do with myself when I'm not at a Grand Prix.
Yeah, it must be weird because it is such a consuming job. It's a lifestyle. It's not a job like that you can check out of. And I think when you're in the situation that Toto Wolff is, where, let's be honest, if he was any other director, he would have been ousted by the team already.
What?
Yeah.
Because like, of the poor performance.
Not just the poor performances, but if you think he's the one that's bearing the responsibility for all of the decisions that have been made, to still be running around in a car that they don't understand it. It's kind of like a new manager coming into, let's say, Manchester City.
It's the football reference, guys.
Always a football reference.
4 minutes, 45 seconds, football reference.
And you throw in a new manager at Manchester City, like this high-flying team that almost can do no wrong, with the best team, with loads of money spent, and then all of a sudden have a terrible a little bit like Chelsea, actually. I know you're a Chelsea football fan.
Well, that's the one team you could have referenced that I would half understand. But okay, let's bring it back to F1. This is a theoretically F1 podcast.
Yeah.
Even though it's not very good.
With the odd football reference. Sometimes tennis.
Apart from Ferrari, it's not a very popular thing within Formula One to chop and change team principals that often. We have fairly stagnant team principals. It does happen.
Yeah, there's a little bit of movement. I feel like he obviously has overseen a lot of decisions that have been made that actually have been the wrong decisions.
And I mean, this is such a punchy start to the episode. I'm going to title this, Should Mercedes Fire Toto Wolff? I mean, he owns the team, so I don't think it's possible.
But that's also, I feel, a problem.
A conflict of interest.
Yeah.
It's a bit like when Claire Williams, and this is so tough because I don't know Claire, and I love Williams, but I'm going on what other people have said in other news outlets. Claire refused to fall on her own sword. It seemed like she overstayed her welcome slightly, and maybe as much as she'd taken the reins on from her father, and it was an iconic role and all these things like that, maybe she wasn't best placed to run the team at that time.
Yeah.
And everyone was telling her, and she was a bit like, but I'm Claire Williams.
Yeah.
Which, good point, Claire.
And look, this is obviously, if you look at Toto Wolff's reign across Mercedes, all of the incredible things that he has done, this is just a tiny slip up. But I think in a lot of other sports, by this point, he would have been punted out and then tried to get someone else in.
Yeah, I guess, and it's the owner of the team part that's stopping that from happening.
And then you feel, if this is this is what he lives and breathes, like, it's really hard for him to switch off unless he's popping into his local shop for a browse of
the towels.
The new
pot. It was like a really boho, like, beachy.
I'm imagining him looking around those little twisty things at all of the new postcards that have just been.
It wasn't that bad.
No, I don't know. I suppose Monaco don't have those shops.
No, basically not.
But yeah, I kind of feel like if he's just sat at home not doing anything, he's probably getting quite itchy feet.
But I cannot side with you here on the whole, he should have been fine. This shows you watch too many other sports and how fickle other sports are. Okay, yes, we're looking at the start of another very bad year for Mercedes, but we're going to get into the fact, God, add it to the list. This huge upgrade package is coming. But look at Christian Horner. He endured, theoretically, 20, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 5 or 6 years of Red Bull uncompetitiveness, Williams and their downfall, McLaren. I mean, you know, it's not, consistency is key. And even if you look back at the rise of dominant periods, Red Bull, Mercedes, prior to that, Ferrari, even sort of Honda/Braun with Ross Braun, and then way back to the McLaren era. Like, you need time to build a team. These are hundreds and hundreds of people to put in place a work ethic, an ideology to bring people into that team. There's gardening leave, there's all these things. You just heard that Mercedes tried to poach Adrian Newey from Red Bull. Yeah, and this chops and changes, and that takes years for Adrian Newey to suddenly join a team. It would take him a number of years to get up to speed and see his results on a car.
And I do think if I mean, who would fire Toto Wolff? Like, he would have to just step back himself, right? There wouldn't be anyone above him that goes, you are now... I know that there's probably head honchos at Mercedes, as in, like, Daimler.
It's Toto Wolff one third, Jim Ratcliffe one third of Ineos fame, yeah. And I think Mercedes the other third, I believe.
Yeah, okay.
But I thought Toto and Jim maybe increased slightly, and Mercedes have even dropped below a third.
Potentially.
But I think it's a third, a third, a third.
Okay.
So you have the Daimler.
Yeah,
Mark
but order, even if he was to leave, and okay, yeah, I will put the blame on a lot of Mercedes' downfall in the last two seasons on him, and I think he would take that.
Wow.
But I also think if he left, the whole team would fall apart. Lewis would then be like, all right, I'm not hanging. I think Lewis is hanging around because of Toto Wolff.
But do you not remember that a few years ago when there was kind of talk of them both sort of going, and my sporting reference, because I consume sport via Netflix, like 99% of the world, I think, the Michael Jordan
documentary,
The
Last Dance.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And his coach, Phil.
Ooh, yeah. That's,
Phil?
Yeah,
Phil.
Phil. Phil. Yeah,
a bit like Phil. Mike. Probably going to be called Dave. But yeah. They were kind of in it together. As in, like, we've had the success together. We'll only do it together. I'm only coming back if he's there type thing. Or I'm only staying if he's there. And I think Lewis and Toto had that vibe at that time.
Yeah.
Does that continue to this day? Who knows?
I think obviously it does
to it. The upcoming of George, who's kind of Toto's little beloved, prodigy. I don't think they would necessarily need to leave at the same time now, a bit like Schumacher, Todd and Braun, but you could see it. And at some point, Toto Wolff's going to go, for sure.
He has
but
to, yeah.
In the interviews I read about him at that time, he was saying that one of his real true loves is finance. And business, and yes, he might want to go back to that at some point, but the finance of sport and the competitiveness of a race team is for him intoxicating, and that's what obsesses him. So let's see, but let us know your thoughts below. Should Toto Wolff be fired from us? I mean, Paul, with all the after the checkered flag. So with Imola being cancelled, we haven't yet seen.
I know, yeah.
Well, Toto Wolff's potential saving grace.
Yeah, yeah.
This
could save his job.
So let's get into Imola first. Obviously, I think we all acknowledge the right call to cancel the race.
We were talking about it when F1 were trying to continue, and you just were... It was unbelievable that they were even trying.
So many times, history has shown to us that F1 is all about the money.
Mm.
And there have been so many times when races should have been called off, should have been cancelled, and they are determined not to do so because of the money aspect. Yeah. And this looked to be one of those situations. And I think the whole world was like, please don't make this mistake again. Please don't make this mistake again. And I think it's only because of the increased global media attention that Formula One has these days. I mean,
I also think the weather conditions were extreme. I don't think it physically could have gone ahead.
They couldn't have got to the track.
No, it would have had to have been boats, I think.
But I think Formula One would have tried. I genuinely think at times Formula One would have tried.
Yeah.
Or at least like closed doors, like we're not open to the public. We're going to still run the event. Like they are that money obsessed.
Yeah.
And cancelling a race brings into so many questions money and potential losses for Formula One.
Of course.
They were looking for any way for that event to go ahead. But yeah you're right. I mean, it was a phenomenal event. Anyway, freak phenomena. There we go.
A natural disaster.
A natural disaster. One that Sebastian Vettel predicted just for the wrong Grand Prix.
Yeah.
I've seen lots of Photoshopped images where they changed that t-shirt. He said Miami 20, whatever it was, first Imola. Race underwater. They all changed to Imola. So he had a point. But yeah, look, for whatever reasons, these horrific floods and massive rainfall, which have made their way over here. I have to say the dodgy weather we've been experiencing here, it must be the side or the edges of the storms that have been passing through that region of Italy, which is really not far from here. We're 6 hours away or something like that?
It's not far. And on the drive down through the mountains, I experienced some real torrential rain that it is so freak. It is so infrequent that you think, oh my God, this rain is literally going to crack my windscreen. It's going to come through. And honestly, the roads started within, I'd say, 5 or 10 minutes of the rain starting, had rivers going down the road. So it was a relatively sketchy time. And we did see like a recent accident on the other side of the motorway. And I was like, I'm just going to have to just pull the speed back. Everyone was doing sort of 30, 40 miles an hour on the motorway because it was really aggressive. So yeah, it was horrendous to think how much they would have had in Italy, because some of the scenes and videos were pretty
crazy. Yeah, of course, we have a good Italian audience. So of course, I think goes without saying, thoughts are with anyone in that region, anyone affected.
It's also nice to see the F1 community come together in a way to help support, raise money. I saw they were doing, like, whether it was iRacing or there was definitely some Twitch streaming going on. Max and Lando were at the helm of their simulators to try and raise as much money as possible.
Yuki
for those
was on
regions.
The ground with a shovel. F1 actually doing good when historically, I think if Bernie was still in place, they would have done bad. If Ben Exton was still there, they would have raced somehow.
Yeah.
But it's meant that we missed a race in a 3,000 race long year. I think a lot of teams are like, phew.
Yeah.
But we missed the chance to see a lot of big upgrade packages, theoretically, that had been rumored. So we know Mercedes, they're not calling it a B-spec car because I think they're nervous to call it a B-spec car in case it doesn't deliver the results, but they're calling it a major upgrade.
It's the pods, side pods.
Side pods, I think, are huge, but there's various other things that they're talking about, maybe suspension changes, floor changes. I guess we'll find out in a couple of days when they release the full list. So by the time you're listening to this, you probably would have already known or maybe even seen the Grand Prix. That's still to come. I think Ferrari also had big upgrades. Aston Martin, we spoke about this briefly off air, weirdly came out saying we actually don't see any big flaws with our car, so we're just going to just keep improving it.
Yeah, they basically said the only way, it's not like there is one particular element of the car or the way that car drives that they're able to improve. It's almost like across the board it's pretty good. So they're saying the only way for them to get closer to Red Bull is actually just to focus on improving all of the areas. It wasn't like we just need to get the rear wing back up to speed so that we can really get them in the straights and in the DRS. So yeah, they've kind of come out and said, hey, we've actually got a really great car, but therefore where do we go from here?
That's how I read it. I read it as actually a bit of a bad omission.
Admission.
Thank you. God. that was like, maybe we're kind of almost at max potential. Like, it's by saying, you know, the car's great. Like, we're just going to just slowly improve it. Meanwhile, Mercedes is like, well, we're bringing basically a B-spec car. Ferrari, like, we're almost bringing a B-spec car. Red Bull, we know, just absolutely demolishing in terms of development. It kind of makes you think that Aston Martin could be a bit of a sitting duck in the development race, but maybe they're just being genius. Maybe they're not. I mean, they're probably the second fastest car out there at the moment, based at least on championship positions and Alonso's car. Stroll's getting up to speed for sure. You know, if they keep pushing forward on a good rate, then hey, they could stay in that place. But yeah, when they said that, meanwhile, Mercedes, Ferrari, even Alpine are starting to make lots of noises. Yeah, and McLaren, like everyone, I'm worried that they're going to end up being a sitting duck, but let's hope not, because it's been fun.
It has been incredibly fun. And I saw Fernando Alonso driving his favorite car in the world, a DBX.
DBX or DBX 707?
I saw a DBX.
Okay.
Because it was in like a gloss black.
Sure.
So I've seen a lot of DBX 707s driving around, and they're all, I always almost feel like, because it's that almost ultimate Aston Martin SUV, a lot of people go crazy with the Q spec, and a lot of them are like these unique satin paint finishes. And I wonder if when Alonso signed and it was written in, like, you have to drive an Aston Martin. Like,
he wants to, doesn't he?
He just got punted a DBX that they couldn't sell, because it was just like a gloss black car.
It's a generic.
I didn't see the exhaust tips, which obviously is like a dead giveaway with that rear diffuser, but he cruised past and they're like, like Alonso, and he like kind of did like a U-turn and carried on going back. I think if you live down here, like there's very limiting things to do, especially during the day. So obviously Toto popping into his local touristy shop, Alonso coming in to check out the tarmac smoothness. I don't know, like
Alonso probably would be going, where can I launch it in this place? they showed the 2008 race. When was it? Oh, a few days ago, as the live stream that you can go back and watch, one of the best Monaco Grand Prix of recent years. And then right at the start, Alonso
just 15 years ago, Sam.
2008. God.
time flies. Alonso just sends it up the inside. I think it's Heidfeld when he's in dodgy Renault years, like obviously like out of frustration, like the move is just not on.
Yeah.
But now Alonso today would be like, never. I am more calculated than this. This would not happen. So it's quite good to see that even back then he was not the perfect image of himself that he presents today. But yeah, I guess our tip on that is, if you want to see F1 drivers and Monaco, like in a kind of raw way, come for the weekend or the Monday and Tuesday before the Grand Prix. But you have to stay.
I think we've known that for quite a few years, because going back to my car spotting days and coming into Monaco for April for Top Marks, and then knowing that the Grand Prix was coming in May, there was always this build up on the Monday, the Tuesday and the Wednesday, and evenings were the sort of prime time. And you had, I remember Jenson Button cruising around in his McLaren P1. You had Felipe Massa cruising around in his LaFerrari. So there were always these images coming out of F1 drivers driving their special cars around. And I feel like over the more recent years, we've lost that a little bit. But this year in particular, and maybe it has been helped by Imola, a lot of the drivers have been seen cruising around. Did you see Lando Norris in his that little?
No, oh, no, in the Fiat.
Yeah, in the little
is it a blue one?
Yeah,
that's insane.
Did you see it? I've seen photos of it, and
I've seen the car.
Yeah,
and I went, oh look, the cool car. And it was parked basically next to us.
Yeah, because he was cruising around there. So that was Lando, and he was there with a couple of his friends.
So he must have just been chilling. Probably didn't even realise. Even notice.
Yeah.
What a joke.
But like, obviously, we as Lewis Hamilton fans know that over
many... We know where he lives. Many, I thought you were going to be, we know his apartment. We're just being respectful and not going there.
But many years, obviously, after the Saturday, it was famous for him to take his Zonda out if he had a good qualifying session.
Yeah, if he was on pole, he would do a victory lap in his Zonda.
So I was like, come on, like the driver's got to bring that back. Like, bring back this sort of rock star image, these superhuman Formula One drivers driving the coolest, craziest road cars. I want to see Alonso in a Valkyrie. I want to see all of these drivers. Ocon in an A110R.
Maybe I did see that because I saw an A110R.
Did you?
Could have been Ocon.
It probably was.
Oh my God, I'm missing all the drivers.
I've seen Toto Wolff. I'm pretty sure I've seen Gasly. Obviously, Lando.
Could have been Seb Delaney.
Yeah, could well have been.
Same person.
Yeah. I was actually in a car with him and I was like, hey, it's Gasly. I think Seb has seen a few drivers. Obviously, Formula E was here a couple of weeks ago. So I bumped into a few Formula E drivers as well, which was quite cool. And also surreal, because you're seeing these people that notoriously are on television putting their helmets on and getting in these cars. And sometimes it's actually hard when you're watching the cars driving around to go, that is being controlled.
That's a person.
A person is piloting that. And so when you see them in normal clothes doing very normal things, you're like, this is quite a cool experience.
Yeah. Actually, you're just a normal bloke. I can probably do what you do. After the
checkered flag. Well, I touched on it. I teased it at the beginning. Monaco, obviously famously known as the crown jewel in the F1 crown.
The jewel in the jewel in F1's crown. Anyway, it's
the spectacle, right? It's the one that everyone knows, the one that everyone always kind of wants to attend.
The
glitz and the glamour, it seems to always
be. The yachts.
Yeah, at the same time as Cannes Film Festival, you get lots of celebs. However,
DiCaprio's
has that
coming.
Kind of... DiCaprio's coming?
Yeah, this weekend.
Oh yeah, he will be, won't he? Because he literally was in Cannes yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh my God, so...
There's a lot of cool people, actually.
I just realised.
Yeah.
A lot of cool people.
Yeah.
I'm now getting really excited.
Yeah. Oh, I've had the scoop from Seb. I know where they're all going for the Sunday night, Saturday night, Sunday night.
I'm sure.
But my question was going to be with Vegas, Miami.
Yep.
Obviously, Singapore and Abu Dhabi doing their part over the recent years. But the increase or the influx in American viewers. And does Monaco still hold its place? Especially because, as we know,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Oh, the Sunday race now, dead.
Yeah. I would say yes. I still think Monaco is the number one Grand Prix to attend.
And wow.
I do. Okay.
Really?
I do. Yeah, because I think it's the whole experience and the weekend. And you're forgetting that the race really is an hour and a half, maximum 2 hours of the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got this tiny little city, its own principality, that fundamentally transforms into a racetrack, and you have so many ways to watch, to consume. The hotels put on a show. There's parties every night. We've been lucky enough to experience the whole... Monaco itself is a bubble, right? You come down here and you're walking through going, how is this real life? This tiny little place with skyscrapers built into the mountains. You've got the sea there. They're building a bloody island on it now, and I'm hearing some amazing things about that. And on the actual weekend, from Thursday to Sunday, there's just this almost additional bubble where you can go down to the pit lane and the start finish, which fundamentally becomes a street party. You've got all of the fans that spill out onto the track. You can walk the Fairmont hairpin right after. You can pick the rubber up from the side. There's not many racetracks where you can do that. And I actually think if the American audience is growing, I'm not necessarily sure it's the American audience that are excited about Miami and Vegas. I think the American audience love Europe and love coming over here, and it would give them more of an excuse to come and visit a place like Monaco to experience it for the Formula One weekend. I think it's a lot of the European and everyone outside of America that go, oh my God, we're racing in Vegas. I actually think a lot of Americans don't really like Vegas.
I think Vegas is the dump.
Yes, so do I.
But I'm going to completely disagree with you. I think Monaco's the worst race to attend of the entire year.
What?
A million percent.
All right.
I will start listing off the reasons. Firstly, yes, we have had amazing access.
No. I'm not talking about the access. I actually wasn't bringing access into
it. Because price point, firstly, but secondly, general public access. Like, if you're going to a grandstand seat, Monaco is one of the worst for visibility.
Yeah.
You get the tiniest percentage of circuit to actually look at. There are such few grandstands that give you more than a straight or a corner to view.
Yeah.
So you've got 2 hours of... and then maybe a minute until you see the cars come around again. Okay, fine, it's the race elongates, you get back markers, you get field spread, whatever. But as we know, the Grand Prix historically doesn't see a lot of action. Now, people are going to come back and rebuke me and say, oh, what about the year that Hamilton lost power, Ricciardo lost power? And there are, of course, exceptions. And I'm an F1 fan and I watch every single year, even though I know not a lot might happen. And there are things to still be excited about. But in general, it's usually a pretty processional race these days. So your visibility of the track, crap. Your access to Monaco, if you're not staying here, fairly crap. If you look at TikToks and Instagrams and stories of people getting on the train from Nice into Monaco at a Grand Prix weekend, it looks horrific.
Yeah.
Then you're having to walk around absolutely everywhere because there's no transport network in place. So if you arrive at the station and you've got to get to the, I don't know, grandstand at Tobacco or whatever, like you've got a schlep, a long schlep. Everything is expensive. Every restaurant, every sales stand, every hotel. Like, so prices are through the roof. And we spoke about it on the main podcast, which goes live in a few days on this channel. the them and us at Monaco is worse than any other Grand Prix, because usually at a Grand Prix, there's the paddock club, there's certain hospitalities beyond that, which is like, I'm sorry, you can't come in, this is invited guests. But go to Spa, you can get general access. Go to Monza, you can get general access. And you can stand in various places and see stuff going on, and you can walk around the whole track. Monaco, almost everywhere is, sorry, sir, you don't have the right access. Yeah. And that stretches after the actual Grand Prix. So the only saving points, I would say, are the huge saving points that, firstly, it's Monaco.
Yeah.
We biasedly love this place. Secondly, absolutely, you're right. It's mind-boggling when you arrive here that there is a Formula One circuit amongst these streets. Thirdly, that yes, you can walk or drive the circuit, not only in the build-up to the race, but between Grand Prix sessions, like literally 5, 6 p.m., gates open, off you go, just driving the track. And as you say, with the rubber that's been discarded from Formula One tires, that on a Saturday night, after qualifying, ahead of a race, the entire circuit, or in certain sections, is literally a club. Like, they set up bar stools, music, dancing, there were girls on podiums, like, insanity. And you're like, people are going to be racing here tomorrow. Like, is this alcohol not slippery? Because it's all over the floor. So the madness of it is what makes it amazing. And on a sunny day, it's the most beautiful place to be around those. Like, everything is great, but, if you are wealthy enough to get in and do it well.
I mean, a lot of valid points. A lot of valid points. I was coming from the perspective of how in recent times I've most enjoyed the weekend, which actually doesn't include trying to watch the race live. So I would probably want to have a place like this, a TV there that you can tune in and watch the Formula One, the qualifying and the race. And then as soon as you know that the race is finished and the roads are opening up, you can drive down. I know parking is a bit of a mess, but then you can, I just love walking around and soaking up the atmosphere. And we don't really go out and party that much. And I actually
speak for yourself.
I actually just quite like walking around and soaking the atmosphere up. We've done it many a time where you just walk down to Raskas and you can just see this huge street party and you walk through all of these incredible yachts. And you just people watch. And then you go car spotting. And one restaurant in particular, Sam, that you completely forgot about is McDonald's. They do not raise the prices and they do not halve the menu. But yeah, you're right. We have experience going into some of our favorite restaurants in Monaco where they literally reduce the menu to about 10% of what they normally offer and then times the price by 3.
Which is insanity.
It is, yeah.
So I think we love this weekend for many reasons that aren't the actual Grand Prix itself.
Yes.
And so therefore I don't want to recommend people come and this is the Grand Prix you want to
take. I know what you mean.
It's an experience. And yes, to be here is incredible. And it has this kind of unique buzz and vibe. But if you are looking at the calendar going, right, which race should I attend? You're going to come and be like, I didn't really see the, like, where was the race? Like, what happened? Like,
I know, yes.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, you're going to spend a ton of money. Basically, just ask around and get invited by, like, I don't know what you have to do. Set up a dodgy Instagram page where you stand by cars and, like, give a thumbs up and then get invited by somebody. Because that, when you have that experience, then it is the best Grand Prix in the world.
Do you want to hear a funny and quite silly story, I think, is probably the best way to describe it. Because we have been lucky enough to experience Monaco, to see the cars actually race. And I've seen it from the Fairmont Hotel.
We've seen qualifying
from like a rooftop just after the first corner. I got in
meters from the track.
Invited. Yeah, we could have literally thrown a banana skin out there and watched the card spin out. I got invited on a boat with Roger Dubuis.
Sick.
And they were hosting guests for their run to Monaco. So it was a supercar drive from Paris down to Monaco. And I was thinking, oh my God, I'm about to tick a bucket list. I'm going to watch the Monaco Grand Prix from a boat and I'm going to have the cars whizzing past the back of the boat and I'm just going to be in complete dreamland. What I didn't realize was the boat didn't have quite What's the word? A favourable mooring position.
Sure.
So the viewing boat point was actually right in the middle of the marina. I had no visibility of the track whatsoever. And they literally had like an 18-inch iPad on the wall playing the race. But it was like they were streaming the race. So you could hear the car go past you through the swimming pool section. And then you'd look up at the TV and about 4 or 5 seconds left, you'd be like, oh, that was... Charlotte Club.
Yeah,
so out of sync. And I was like, this is a complete letdown to what I'd built up in my brain as to what it was going to be like. And I can imagine it would be incredible to be on a boat right on that sort of front line, watching the cars zip past, but it didn't quite live up to the expectations.
Because this is going to make us sound even more out of touch. So from Paul's Roger Dewey on a yacht in Monaco disaster, I'll give you two more. But I'll caveat it by saying this is trying to explain the level of access you need at Monaco to actually have a truly special experience, where other circuits you can have a much limited and get more. So firstly, do you remember the first time we came down?
Oh, I remember.
So Paul and I came down for the Grand Prix weekend to do everything that Paul has spoken about that's aside from actually the Grand Prix. So we had no access.
We just wanted to go car spotting. We wanted to go car spotting.
We wanted to see Hamilton and the Zonda. Like, we just wanted to be around. We thought, well, maybe once we're there, maybe we'll meet some people or we'll be able to find a way to like get some access. Once I made it down, I was speaking to my dad. He said, oh, what are your plans? I said, oh, we're here for the Grand Prix weekend. And I don't really know.
Sam's dad is Prince Albert, by the way. Yeah.
Close enough. And anyway, so I said, look, we don't know if we're going to watch the race because we haven't got any tickets. He goes, oh, would you like me to call around and see if I know anyone? I said, yeah, sure. Like, ask around. And the lady that afternoon calls back and turns out, classic dad, spoken to somebody in the Monaco royal family. Yeah. And he goes, this looks like I'm going to put you in touch. This is Prince blah, 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 blah. I think they can sort you out. You have fun. And I was like, cheers, dad. Like, classic you. And I get an email. This is the secretary of Prince, blah, 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 blah. He's able to get you a pass for the Sunday. You just need to go to the...
palace.
No, it was a yacht. It was a boat in the harbour to collect it. So I went, great. I said, just to check, is it two passes? I'm here with my friend. And they went, I'm sorry, it's one. Yeah. So I messaged my dad and I'm like, oh, dad, it's like the guy's only got one pass. I'm here with Paul. Like, I'm good. Like, I don't even know what it is. And my, this is a very my family thing to do, which is like, oh no, we've called in the favor now.
Yeah,
you've got to take it.
You're like, going.
Like, I've spoken to the royal family.
You can't turn them down.
And the royal family, 2 days before the Grand Prix, being like, sure, I'll get a pass for your son. And then she's going to go, I'm not interested.
I actually think I told you exactly the same thing. Yeah. I was like, I'm not sure this is something you can say yes or no to.
I'm like, dad, I'm not that fussed. I was like, you're going. So off I went, I picked up this pass, and the pass like super nondescript. It didn't tell me where I had to be, like what it was accessed to, but it like looked super official. So I just started walking towards the track, and everyone I show it to, they're like, please, please come through. Like every rope is lifted. And I get ushered up to the ACM, the Automobile Club Monaco, whatever.
Yeah.
Which is on the start finish straight. It's above race control and it's a viewing platform, literally above the start line. Literally, you can see it. If you look on TV coverage or if you're ever here at Monaco, it's this kind of circular building. It's a level on the top. And I get up there. Now this sounds awful, but I mean, this is what the royal family watched. I mean, like, this is ridiculous. There's nowhere to sit. There's no food.
No TV.
There's no drink. No TV. And it was, I remember, it was like 27 or 28 degrees.
It was hot.
And I remember texting you being like, I don't know anyone here.
Yeah.
I can't really see anything. Like if I go to the one side, I can kind of look down and see the start line. If I go to the other side, I can see the cars coming through. I guess it was tobacco or going into the swimming pool. Like, cool, but I was like craning my neck. And everyone else was already there because I was arriving late. And you were like, oh, dude, like I ended up going to the Fairmont with Yanni. I got a view of the hairpin. I was like, oh my God. So that was firstly a disaster. I mean, the royal family gave me a pass and it was actually crap. And I say, like, I felt unwanted or like one thing. And then the other one is Formula One themselves. Do you remember I did that hilarious advertising campaign, which is actually an amazing opportunity. They got like a load of super fans to come in and like tell their story of how they like found Formula One.
Oh, yes.
And it ended up looking like I was in some weird dodgy porno with like some stuff getting spread in my face. Somewhere on my Instagram if you want to go and have a real laugh. But off the back of it, they said, look, if you ever want to attend a race, let us know. So I said, oh, I'm going to be in Monaco and you know, I'd love to attend. So they said, great, we'll sort all the passes. And I went to collect the passes and it said a paddock pass. And I was like, brilliant. And I was like, but at that point I'd been to enough races that I was like, have you got a paddock club or and they went, no, this is the passes. And I was like, that's kind of weird because they are very separate things. And a paddock pass is just for the paddock. You need to be invited by a team. into one of the motorhomes. The paddock club is a separate area, which is hospitality with food and drink. There's no grandstand in the paddock. There's often no TVs in the paddock. Like, so I was like, this is super weird, but maybe I'll get there and I'll meet someone. So I was actually with Vicky and I'd like, we've done like F1, and we get there and the paddock in Monaco is off to the side where Stars and Bars, a great diner, is located. Fantastic. But away from the track, up near Raskas, the final corner. And we check in, beep, and we're in the paddock. I'm like, God, you can't see the track here. There's no TV. Okay, fine.
You're actually miles away from the track.
Yeah, there's the interview pen. So that's kind of cool. I can see the drivers. Like, that's cool. And I was walking up and down, like looking for like a Formula One hospitality or something like that. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe these are like super passes because they've come from F1. So yeah. I just like walk up to the McLaren motorhome. They're like, hello, sir. And I went, hi. And I show the pass. They went, do you have a McLaren invite? And I went, no. Do I need a separate invite? They're like, I'm so sorry. It's only for invited guests. I was like, oh, right. So I try like Ferrari. I try like, at that time it must have been Force India. They're all saying the same thing. So I send an email to the people and I'm like, hey, like, I don't want to sound rude, but like where else can I go? Because I'm just in the paddock and I can't really see it. And they reply saying, oh my God, I'm so sorry. This has been a mistake from our end. I'm afraid it's too late, but you can enjoy the paddock. And I'm like, so I just stand in the paddock? Like, obviously I did. Like, yeah. I stood there, made Vicky stand there for like 2 hours. While I'm like, there's a driver. But again, so this is now us sounding super out of touch and ungrateful. But my point being, even when you get these hookups, incredible watch companies, boats in Monaco, royal families and Formula One themselves, you still need more. So I think wait until you have more. Like, I want to be at every party. I want to be like sleeping on the boat. I want the boat to be next to the track. I want the drivers to come and shake my hand. Like, then you're doing Monaco. Like, that's Brad Pitt should be sitting next to you.
Prince Albert, and that's
apparently it. Not. Because I was with him. It was boring.
Okay, so how would you build the ultimate Monaco Formula One weekend?
Here we go.
Go on.
So maybe
based on our experience, surely we can create the ultimate package.
So I would say, fly in to Lyon, Milan, Marseille.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up a cool car.
Like a rental car?
Yeah, pick up a cool rental car Drive down or along the coast into Monaco.
Into Monaco though, right?
No, into Monaco. I'm saying fly on the Friday. Fly on the Thursday or the Friday.
Okay.
Drive across. You want to be in one of the prime hotels in central Monaco. So around Casino Square, Metropole, in Monaco.
We're working off about a 20 grand budget here.
Oh yeah, but you said the ultimate package.
Yeah.
Oh, because the point I'm trying to make is there is no general average Joe access. Like the average Joe sitting on the hill up to the Monaco Castle.
I see what you mean, yeah.
That is not a thing. Firstly, that is one of the most expensive tickets of the year.
Yeah.
And you're sitting on a hill with nothing, overlooking, okay, quite a bit of the track, but you got like, that's not good.
Yeah, that's not good.
So to build the ultimate package is the $250,000 package.
Okay, all right.
There's no other option. There's no other way to do it. Because even if you get what you think is good, oh, I've got Paddock Club from Monaco. Well, but what are you doing after the Grand Prix? Because actually where you want to be is the club where Danny Rick is hanging out with Leonardo DiCaprio and in walks, I don't know, female celebrities, but in they come, you know, like, do you know what I mean? And then you're like, I'm living the Monaco life.
Yeah.
And Charlotte Claire's puking on your shoulder and you have to carry Felipe Massa home. And you know, that's the kind of, then you're doing Monaco.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's so reserved for the few.
Yeah. I was thinking more of like, how can you do Monaco as like an ultimate experience without spending crazy money?
You don't. I genuinely don't think you can. I think we get a kick out of being here because we're nerdy car spotters and we like everything that's going on around the Grand Prix weekend. But as a Formula One enthusiast or someone who wants to come with their mates or their family, I think I personally think you'll be disappointed.
Okay. So really you should come to Monaco for the 4 days in the build up to the F1 to get a sense of the atmosphere and then just drive straight to Barcelona.
Leave on Friday afternoon.
Drive straight to Barcelona, check into a hotel and wait for everyone to come.
It's an even worse Grand Prix. After the checkered flag. So let's wrap things up then by at least talking, I guess, a bit about racing rather than about prices and tickets and how out of touch we are with our stupid invites to Grand Prix. Do we actually think that something is going to happen to the pecking order this weekend? You know, of all the places for Mercedes to bring the,
I know,
in inverted commas, B-spec car, Monaco theoretically not the greatest place. It's all going to be decided on Saturday because the cars are bigger than ever.
Yeah.
But do we think we could see some surprises? Could Alonso muscle that car onto the front row and then do another incredible launch and lead the race?
I mean, potentially, if you think about the sort of chance of a red flag during Q3, like, I think you have to consider, what was it before Imola?
Miami.
Was Miami when they had the weird? Yeah, it was Miami after the qualifying where we got that crazy order that obviously sorted itself out after like lap three. But
because in, of the sprint.
Yeah. Huh?
Wasn't it a sprint there? Oh, no, it was Azerbaijan.
No.
God, I'm so confused. Where have we been? What's been happening in our lives?
But I think Monaco can potentially throw up a little bit of a strange starting grid, especially if there's a red flag. And then you kind of think, well, if Alonso is on P1 after their first round of qualifying laps and then the red flag throws up and no one can really have the time to put in another lap, then really, so I personally have a negative thought that the upgrades aren't really going to show themselves around the Monaco track. I think it's just far too tight and twisty for them to really exert any more potential out of the upgrades that are coming, but we kind of have to hope for two things, right? We have to hope for rain, which potentially could come.
Yeah, it's
and short. Hopefully it comes halfway through, as in like half the grid have already pitted, the rain comes in, some people have to do a three stop or two stop, some people will only have to do a one stop. That will start throwing the order up a little bit. And then also potentially a red flag in Q3 that could throw the grid around a little bit, which would then mean the super fast cars like an Aston Martin, a Red Bull, would have to overtake and maybe,
oh God.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, look, if anyone's going to be able to do, you kind of get the feeling it's going to be Verstappen and Alonso.
Yeah.
We've seen Hamilton get stuck many times before. I mean, I think all of them could get stuck. The cars are huge and the roads are tiny, even when you're in a road car. So I'm with you, like, let's hope for a bit of upset, but I there's just a part of me which thinks if, because Red Bull won't have their huge DRS advantage, theoretically, there's not
really,
really many.
They won't have their top speed advantage.
Exactly. So we know that car's amazing anyway, mechanically and, yeah, and around corners, but they're still going to have their pace advantage. But if there's anywhere that we've got a chance of probably Alonso or Russell, maybe Hamilton, sneaking onto the front row and then potentially launching past a Red Bull into turn one, it is here. I think. Mm. Yeah, I don't want to get ahead of myself. I think let's be sort of realistic, but all these big upgrade packages, I say a track that might not be literally Red Bull's best track ever.
Yeah.
We've got hope. There is hope in there somewhere. So let's wait and see. You may be listening to this post the Grand Prix and be going, ha, you idiot.
Yeah.
Verstappen won by four laps. Or you'll be going, God, you guys are geniuses. Literally, Alonso won. But hopefully you would have watched this early on over on Recast and the days ahead of the Grand Prix so that you could get excited with us. If you haven't watched these episodes before, you've only listened to them, head over to recast.tv/behindtheglass to watch these videos about 4 or 5 days before they go live, audio only. Anyway, we're going to leave it there because as I think Paul's mentioned about 16 times in this episode. It's sunny outside and he's very excited, so I'm going to let him go into town and do some spotting. I've got to go and rescue my baby from somewhere and probably put it to sleep or do something.
Worth putting a disclaimer in that your wife is with the baby.
Yes, no, of course. But this is supposed to be time off for her as much as it is work time for me, so we're juggling that. But anyway, hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. If you are, as I say, on Recast, keep following us over there. If you're listening to us on another platform, you can do so. Leave us a review and we'll be back with you in a number of weeks. I'm not going to say a couple, but in a number of weeks for our next episode.
We do have it scheduled though.
Yeah, absolutely. I just can't work out what Grand Prix it's going to be after because I've lost track of all the Grand Prix. So stay tuned and we'll be back with you very soon.
We're
bye-bye.
Such pros.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.